Good morning. Sorry for the delay. Technology is wonderful until it doesn't work.
Which is normally all the time.
Amen.
So messing around with PowerPoint here, but I think we got it a workable solution. We're in 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians this morning, working through our study of New Testament introduction, a survey course. So 1 Thessalonians to begin with. We'll try to get through both books. And then, as I mentioned last week, we'll be taking a pause here for probably a couple of months. Pastor Greg's going to be teaching a series on evangelism, and discipleship coming up starting next week. And then we'll get back to New Testament introduction later in the fall, late fall, and finish it up. So 1 Thessalonians, and as we press on through our New Testament study. All right, who wrote it? Easy, Paul. All right, Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians. We eventually, of course, will in the New Testament get to some other authors again. This is one of those pretty clear ones. Church history is overwhelmingly clear, dating back pretty close to the time of the Apostle Paul. You got 2nd century A.D., early church writers, fathers, we often call them, who are writing and identify Paul as the author. Paul also is named twice as the author in this epistle, in this letter. When was it written? 1 Thessalonians written soon after Paul was forced to leave Thessalonica. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, about the background as to what caused Paul's leaving of the city. Probably around 50 to 51 AD is when Paul wrote this. This makes it the second, if this is the case, the second canonical letter, or the second letter, the second epistle that Paul wrote. So 1 Thessalonians is likely the second letter that Paul wrote, Galatians being most likely the earliest. And remember, we talk about that's significant as you can trace themes, problems that develop throughout the early church. And also theology, doctrine, and teaching develop over time as well, clarity on things. So 1 Thessalonians is very early in that process. What's the book about? What's its theme and purpose? Christians, in short, should live sanctified lives, lives that are set apart, lives that are holy, that's what it means, especially in light of Christ's return. And the return of Christ is a very, very, very prominent feature, both in the first book to the Thessalonians and the second book to the Thessalonians. We'll talk about that in just a moment. So more specifically, in 1 Thessalonians, Paul goes through and talks about the kind of ministry, the nature of his ministry in the city. He exhorts and encourages Christians in their godly character. And he gives some very specific instructions as it relates to end time events. And overall, the second one is like this as well, is largely encouraging. It encourages the Thessalonians to live strong, to stand strong, to stay strong in the face of attacks against their faith. Paul also does spend a little time defending his ministry, as was often the case in many of these early epistles. And again, give some practical instructions, especially related to end time events. So there's just roughly what what 1 Thessalonians is about. What about historical background? What happened to bring about the letter? Well, first of all, Paul founded the church in Thessalonica on his second missionary journey. And here we can read about that in the book of Acts. I said we're going to be in Thessalonians. We will get there. I should have had you first turn to Acts. Acts 17, we read about this first missionary journey and Paul's interaction there. I'm going to read Acts 17, 1 through 9, and we get the background for how this letter came about. It says this, verse 1, "Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews." Some people think that that probably indicates that the last couple of cities there weren't synagogues of the Jews. This one, they were happy to see one. Verse 2, "Then Paul, as his custom was, went into them," always to the Jew first, then to the Greek, "went into them, and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them from the Scriptures." So 3 weeks he was in the Sabbath, or in the synagogue on the Sabbath. And what was he doing there? Verse 3, "explaining and demonstrating that the Christ, the Messiah, had to suffer and rise again from the dead, and saying, 'This Jesus whom I preach to you is the Christ.'" So he's calling on these Jewish people to embrace Jesus as Messiah. And verse 4, "some of them were persuaded." Then you notice this, "and a great multitude of the devout Greeks," so these would be probably proselytes to Judaism, "and not a few of the leading women joined Paul and Silas." So there was a very fruitful ministry that happened in the synagogue. Now then we have this in verse 5, "but the Jews who were not persuaded, becoming envious, took some of the evil men from the marketplace and gathering a mob, set all the city in an uproar and attacked the house of Jason and sought to bring them out to the people." Jason probably either housed Paul or was an early convert. "But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city, crying out, 'These who have turned the world upside down have come here too,'" which is just one of the great lines in all of the New Testament. That's what Christianity does. "'These who have turned the world upside down have come here too. Jason has harbored them, and these are all acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus.'" It's wonderful. They got it right, by the way. They got it right. They understood Christianity well. It overthrows, ultimately, all things. "So when they had taken security from Jason and the rest, they let them go. Then the brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. When they arrived," they go right back to the synagogue of the Jews, and they do it again. So there's the background to the founding of the church in Thessalonica. So he's in there 3 weeks in the synagogue. He's forced to leave the city. He continues on, if you read on here in Acts, first to Berea and then to Athens. And then he has an extended ministry in Corinth. So that's if you follow his ministry down through Acts, that's where you see Paul going. It's not very long in Berea, not very long in Athens. Spends about 18 months in Corinth. It's likely that it's from Corinth that Paul wrote this letter to the Thessalonians. Now, Paul, after he leaves the city, and he's here for a short time, we don't know exactly how short, I'll tackle that in a moment, but he's likely anxious for the Thessalonians. So Timothy is sent from Athens to check on the well-being of the church. So you can read that in 1 Thessalonians 3 and verses 1 and 2. "Therefore, I'll back up here. Started at the end of chapter 2, there's a kind of a chapter break that is kind of unfortunate in some ways. Chapter 2, verse 17, "But we, brethren, having been taken away from you for a short time in presence," so that represents what you saw in Acts, right? They got to get out of town or they were going to lynch him. "So we were taken away from you in a short time in presence, not in heart." Our hearts are with you, Paul says, 1 Thessalonians 2, 17. "Endeavored more eagerly to see your face with great desire. Therefore, we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but Satan hindered us. For what is our hope, our joy, or our crown of rejoicing? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ at his coming? For you are our glory and joy." They were the jewels in Paul's crown that he'd be presented at the day of Christ. "Therefore, when we could no longer endure it, we thought it'd be good to be left in Athens alone." You can read that in Acts 17 and into 18. and sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and encourage you concerning your faith, that no one should be shaken by these afflictions and so on. So the picture is there. Paul, he leaves a lot sooner than he would have liked out of Thessalonica. And he's moved on to Athens, and he's thinking about those Thessalonian believers. He wasn't there with them very long. He's really concerned about them. He doesn't want their faith to be shaken. So he sends Timothy back to them. And presumably, Timothy carried with him this letter of 1 Thessalonians, probably the one that delivered this to the church. So he's anxious there. This serves as the immediate reason for why Paul wrote this letter. Timothy had come to Paul in more than once, 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 6. So Paul sent him, Timothy returns back, but now that Timothy has come from you and brought good news of your faith and love, and that you've always have good remembrance of us, greatly desiring to see us, we also to see you. Therefore, brethren, in all our affliction and distress, we are comforted concerning you by your faith. So Paul sends Timothy, comes back. Likely Timothy then is the one who brings this letter again to the Thessalonians. Apparently, when Paul was there in Thessalonica, a number of Jews believed Paul's message. We read that in Acts 17, but it appears that most in the church were Gentiles. You see that evidence in chapter 1 and verse 9. 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 9. For they, talking about the people surrounding in the region of Macedonia, they themselves declare concerning what manner of entry we had to you, how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. So what that indicates is that although Paul had a fruitful ministry, at least in small part, among the Jews in the synagogue, the majority of the people who were reading Paul's letter here were people who had been worshiping false idols and now were worshiping the one true God, indicating that likely most of the church was Gentile in orientation. Now, the city of Thessalonica itself was a very prominent city, important politically, commercially. It was the capital of the Roman province of Macedonia. In Paul's day, the city was the capital there. The prominence of the city is due in part to its location. It's located on the famous Ignatian Way, which is this main thoroughfare of goods and services throughout the Roman Empire. It also enjoyed a natural harbor not far from it, which opens up to the Aegean Sea. So I've got just a map up there. You can see in the top, mostly central area there, where Thessalonica is. I don't know if this one has a laser pointer on it. Let me see if it does. Does it? Oh, sweet. Okay. Can you kind of see that? All right. So Thessalonica is here. If you want to know like where other things are, you get up into here is where you have, over here is where you have like, I'm still wrong. Over here is where you have Istanbul. You have Ephesus, a lot of the seven churches down here where Paul spent much of his first missionary journey. Antioch, of course, is where Paul and Barnabas were originally, or Paul and Barnabas were originally sent out from. Now he's on his second journey, and he's gone past these initial stages of ministry. He's gone much further out into this Macedonian region. Later he goes into Achaia, and that's where he has extended ministry in Corinth and so on. So this is a little bit about where Paul is at. Here is a slide indicating the provinces that would have been in existence roughly during the time of Paul, the Roman provinces. So there you have Macedonia. Right there is Thessalonica. Mentioned specifically Amphipolis and Apollonia and Berea also in Acts 17. Those are all up there as well. So there's Paul's ministry journey. Today, the city of Thessaloniki is the modern city of Thessaloniki, sits over top the ancient city of Thessalonica in Greece. So these are some, I've never been there, but these are some interesting pictures, give you an idea of the ancient world. I mean, these are, those are ruins of the kind of the main business street Paul would have been there. And you can see you've got a modern city built up all around it. A lot of those buildings would be sitting on top of ruins that are 3,000 years old, you know. And just like, you know, you, if you ever read about when archaeologists go into old cities, they have layers of the city built on top of each other, built on, but we're still doing that. Like, we're still doing that. That's what's going on here. Here's another representation of that. This is a little later time period. This would have been after the Pauline time, probably 2nd, 3rd century AD. You can tell by the stone structures, which are different, but it still would have been connected to that ancient city. Here, this has been slightly reconstructed, as I understand it, of probably the area in which government leaders were meeting. This may have been the spot where Jason was drugged. But you can see, again, you got modern city right there all around it. So this is a very, very old part of the world. And so this is where Paul was at. So there's just a little bit of the historical background of Thessalonica, the city and how the church came about. Very important city, very important trade route, capital of this region. It was a rich region. It's an old region. You know, it's controlled by the Romans, but the history of the Greek Empire bleeds through. Its culture is really strong there. A little more about 1 Thessalonians, the book itself, what kind of a book it is, the genre. It conforms to the normal pattern of Greco-Roman letters, so it's an epistle, it's a letter. What about the theology of the letter? 1 Thessalonians makes, as I write here, a significant contribution to the biblical eschatology. It addresses both the rapture and the day of the Lord in chapter 4 and chapter 5. Of course, as I write there, while believers look forward to the rapture with great anticipation, they do not need to fear the judgment aspect of the day of the Lord. That's what chapter 5 is about. And Paul's, and it's a fancy word here, we use the word eschatological. All that means is it's teachings about last things. The eschaton is the end. So when you use that word, eschatological, teachings about the last things. Paul's eschatological teaching should engender Christian sanctification. You're going to be ready for the coming of the Lord. You should be more holy because the Lord is coming at any time. And so thus, sanctification is another key concept, theological concept in 1 Thessalonians. If you're going to have a discussion about the tribulation, about the rapture, and the timing of those events, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians are going to be the key books in the New Testament that you're going to go to. Just you're going to spend a lot of time there thinking through that and tying that in both with other New Testament references to last things and also the Old Testament as well. Key issues. somehow I got the same slide up here again. Forgive me here. Let me get through that. There we go. Key issues. First of all, according to Acts 17:2, as we mentioned when we read this, Paul ministered in the synagogue for 3 Sabbaths. And so one question that has arisen as people study this book is how long was Paul in Thessalonica? And some people, excuse me, some people have taken that reference there in Acts 17 to say then that Paul was only there for at most 4.5 weeks. You know, maybe he arrived on a Monday, was there for the first Sabbath and the second Sabbath, then the third Sabbath, and then before the next Sabbath, he was kicked out of the city, right? So maybe he was, you know, only there for a relatively short time. However, I don't think that's necessarily the way that you should read Acts 17. So go back to Acts 17 for a moment, and you'll see this. So we were in So Acts 17 and verse 4 says, and some of them, that is the people in the synagogue, were persuaded, great multitude of these devout Greeks, not a few of the leading women, joined Paul and Silas. And then it says in verse 5, but the Jews who were not persuaded, becoming envious, took some of the evil men from the marketplace. The text is not actually clear as to when verse 5 occurred. Did it come at right after the third Sabbath? Did it come on the third Sabbath itself? The text does not say. When we look at the rest of the New Testament evidence, it seems that Paul was there a little more than just three Sabbaths in the city. He ministered likely in the synagogue for three Sabbaths, three Saturdays, but probably was in the city a little bit longer than that. You say, why do we know that? First of all, if you go, I know we're bouncing around, so go back to 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9. Just context-wise, he's talking about his ministry there among them. Start at verse 6. Not only did we seek glory, did we seek glory from men, they didn't seek glory from men, either from you or from others, that we might have made demands as apostles of Christ. He's talking about being financially compensated. But we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. So affectionately longing for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become dear to us. For you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, we preach the gospel of God to you. Now, what's he talking about? He's saying that while I was there, myself and the team that was with me, we labored among you by day, and at night we were working to earn a living, so that we didn't take any money from you. So if he was only there for 3 weeks, you'd have to ask the question, would that be significant in the minds of the Thessalonians? And secondly, would Paul even have a chance to establish his trade in the city in just 3 weeks' time? Probably indicates he was there longer. Furthermore, even just the nature of how Paul talks, of his affection and his love for these people, indicates that there was a bond that was a little stronger than just created in 3 weeks. Another interesting thing is if you go to the book of Philippians, we see another strand of evidence that Paul was there longer than just 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Philippians 4 and verses 15 and 16, Paul is writing essentially in Philippians here a thank you note for the support that the Philippians had given to Paul while he was in Thessalonica. And notice how Paul says this in verse number 15. Now, you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel from which I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. You were my only supporting church, Paul says to the Philippians. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid. How many times did he do it? It's more than once. Once and again. Now, if you go back, let's see if I can get to that map here. This does. Okay, so let me play this here for a second. Did that show up? Okay. So if you go back and you look at the map, I know this is really small, especially in the back. All right. Here's Thessalonica right here. Okay. Berea is not very far away from it. Philippi isn't terribly far. Okay, so it's a journey, but you're talking at a minimum, 2 days to get there and back. At a bare minimum. Okay. And so you look at it and you go, how long did it take for the messenger from Philippi to get to Thessalonica? If Paul was only there 3 weeks, so Paul goes to the city, the Philippians raise some money, send somebody over there, he finds out what's going on, gets back, raises more money, and gets there again before about 4 weeks are out. That just seems really highly unlikely. Are you following that? Does that make sense? The reason I say this is that occasionally you'll hear people preach that the Thessalonians were such an amazing church that in just 3 weeks they had become mature in the Lord. And it is, when you read 1 Thessalonians, it is amazing how fast they mature in Christ. But I don't think we can argue that they were did that only in 3 or 4 weeks. So
some churches were degraded and worked on and wound up being degraded again. And so a lot of their growth, though, too, might have been just further along in their spiritual growth before the Apostle Paul was there. You had less hammering at the forge, too.
Absolutely. I mean, this was a mature church, no doubt about it. They grew. So key issue, one thing as you read through this, people will debate about how long Paul was there. If you look at the Pauline timeline of his missionary journey, we can date things pretty clearly within reason. The longest possible stretch he could have been in Thessalonica was about 6 months. And there's a number of reasons why we can date that with surety. Probably there, I'm guessing he was there 3 or 4 months, which is fairly quick. Still, so not necessarily 4 weeks or 3 weeks, but 3 or 4 months. So quite, you know, not a real long time. That gives evidence of the fast maturity of these believers. They did very, very well. Another key issue: 1 Thessalonians makes a significant contribution to biblical eschatology, as I mentioned there. Paul's eschatological teaching is focused there at the end of the book. And I'm not going to get into trying to lay out the rapture and the day of the Lord and all of that. I cannot possibly do that in 9 minutes because I want to just touch on 2 Thessalonians here as well. One thing, though, that's worth pondering, and this is just worth pondering, is that let's assume that on the high end, Paul was there for 6 months. On the low end, maybe 2 months. So 2 to 6 months. These are brand new believers. This is a brand new church. The idea of a church had not existed in the minds of these people until Paul got there. I think it's worth at least pondering that Paul thought that eschatology, the doctrine of last things, was so important that he instructed them with some measure of clarity that they had significant end times questions that needed to be answered by Paul after only being there for 2 to 6 months. And Paul actually talks about, if you read both 1 and 2 Thessalonians, he reminds them, when I was there, this is what I instructed you. Now, the reason I bring that up is it is very, very, very popular among American evangelicals and conservative Christians to say, you know, the end time stuff doesn't really matter. You know, we just agree on the gospel. And there's part of me that resonates with that. I don't think that you have to hold an exact position as I do about the timing of the rapture or all the details of the millennium. I hold them with tenacity, but I understand that there's a lot of Christians disagree with me. So in the one sense, I agree with that. You know, of course, yeah, I mean, the gospel is the central thing. But when you look at Paul's ministry, a book like this, both 1 and 2 Thessalonians, Paul thought that eschatology was important. He taught it very quickly to the believers. And in fact, he believed it was so important, it was essential to their sanctification, because if you believe in the coming of the Lord and the significance of that coming, you want to be ready for that day. We'll be ready for that day. And that's a key theme that shows up in both 1 and 2 Thessalonians. So it gives me the spiritual eebie-jeebies when somebody says, you know, we don't really care about eschatology. Well, the Bible does, actually. So Jesus did, Paul did, so did Peter. Yeah, they all reference it heavily. And so just food for thought. So 1 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians, this will go very quickly. 2 Thessalonians. Got an outline there for you in your handout. Then we get to 2 Thessalonians. Who's the author? Again, it's claimed to be written by Paul. Twice also in this letter, Paul identifies himself as the author, and he references specifically in chapter 3 and verse 17. This is another one of those letters in which he says, "The salutation of Paul with my own hand, which is a sign in every epistle, so I write." This is interesting to note. If you read in 2 Thessalonians, there were people who were already in Paul's day sending out letters in the name of other people. And Paul is like, this is my signature, here's my seal, this is the stamp of approval that this is a legitimate letter. So Paul's the author, but there were already confusions among the believers as to who had authority by the time you get to 2 Thessalonians. What's the date of this this letter? If we accept that Paul wrote 2 Thessalonians, the book is probably written shortly after 1 Thessalonians. Thus, as 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians can be dated at around AD 50 to 51 while Paul was in Corinth. So probably in the same ballpark, same time period there. There was some confusion that apparently happened in the Thessalonians, more questions about what the day of the Lord was. So a significant portion of 2 Thessalonians is written to address that specific question. What's it about? What's the book about? Theme and purpose: Christians should understand Christ's return and live in light of it. And this is a beautiful picture here. This letter comforts the church in Thessalonica in light of misunderstandings and false teachings concerning the end time. Comfort is a key theme. Be comforted, brothers and sisters. There were people that were teaching that the day of the Lord had already come. People are panicked about that. What does that mean for us? Are we under the judgment? Are we under the wrath of God? And Paul comforts them. No, brothers and sisters, the day of the Lord has not come. You will know when it comes. Historical background. I'm just going to skip over this very quickly because it's largely the same as what we just saw in 1 Thessalonians, except for what I just added. There's some further questions about the day of the Lord. What kind of literature is it? Same thing, it's a letter. It conforms to the standard of a Greco-Roman letter or epistle. And again, the theology of 2 Thessalonians is like that of 1 Thessalonians. It's primarily eschatological. There's that big word again. Talking about doctrine or teachings of last things. So there's just full of it, full of that that teaching. Then finally, just talk about the structure of the book. It's got an introduction, it's got a body of the letter, and a conclusion. The body of the letter can be divided in a couple of parts. It's got a doctrinal section focusing on the day of the Lord and a practical section focusing on proper Christian living. This is interesting, both in 1 and 2 Thessalonians. It has an unusual feature of Paul's letters in that he has two thanksgiving sections and two prayers. You know how Paul usually starts all of his letters? I thank my God, you know, upon every remembrance of you, something like that. Then he gives reasons why he thanks God, and then he says, and my prayer is... He does that twice, both in 1 and 2 Thessalonians. I think that indicates the affection and the love that he had for these believers here and they towards them. All right, I've got about just a couple of minutes. Any questions? I know it flew through 2 Thessalonians really fast, but any questions about the structure, the background, about the book, anything I could try to answer? Back in 2000 and I think it's 14 and into 15, I preached through 1 Thessalonians. So it's been quite some time since I've done that. And I have my eye on one day doing 2 Thessalonians as well. So it's kind of my hope to do that at some point in the next couple of years. So it takes time to get through these books. And man, Matthew is a beast. So taking a while. All right. Well, if no questions, we'll dismiss and get ready for the morning worship service. You're dismissed. Thanks.